If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is, but I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Hello, everybody. Hi. This is My Good Bad Brain. This is going to be episode 2 of our third season, which means it's the Dr. Nick and I talking stuff. Before we get into that, though, and it's a good episode today. We talked about what do people ask questions about. Well, I had questions about helping other people when they're deep in, you know, bad mental states, including some stuff about suicide risk assessment based on some experiences I had pretty recently. People ask questions about codependency. It's good. There's a lot of good. It's just good, man. I've been really enjoying this. I think the whole goal for me in asking Nick to be part of it, and I think his goal in saying yes, is just trying to make these resources, you know, mental health professionals, people who have actual knowledge and the, what do you call it, the bona fides, you know, making that available freely and publicly to whoever is out there that might have questions, might have, you know, because obviously we can't be like teledocs. Nobody's trying to do that. We're not claiming to do that. But, you know, when we all talk about mental health awareness and the resources being so hard to get and just our whole society, I wanted to do this. And I've really been delighted the last few weeks of figuring out this live stream thing. Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. If you can make it to be there live, you can send questions in ahead of time to mygoodbadbrain@gmail.com, or you can just go to mixer.com/mygoodbadbrain at 10 a.m. Pacific on Sunday mornings and, you know, ask questions in the chat and just hang out. I'll keep posting them. I'll do them like this. They become the episode for the week. But, you know, it's nice to have people live. It's fun. And if you are out there and you are wondering, you have questions, you wish you had somebody to ask more specifically, talk to, who knows what they're talking about, man, Nick Barr is amazing. Dr. Nick, an active professor, worked for a long time as a social worker, specifying in trauma work. He's amazing. So, you know, come by. I hope you're doing okay as you quarantine and as this strange anxiety grows of this differently shaped world that we've got going on here at home. It's me and it's Grammy and it's Allie. And we've pretty much self-quarantined. I mean, we went to the grocery store last night because we had to stock up and do some things. And you know, cause we don't know how long we're going to be in here. And we'd already gone, but we were just like, ooh, I think we're gonna need a little bit more. And when we got home, we literally wiped Lysol wipes over everything with plastic gloves, with like latex gloves on. You know, we're going nuts. And at the grocery stores, everybody's stocking up, and this, you know, it's very tense. It's very anxious out there. It just feels weird. It feels like everyone's thrumming with a little bit of a different energy. You can feel it washing into you, everybody's anxiety. Because our world, the shape of our world, the foundation of like our society and our civilization is really getting a little shake here. And I think that's probably rather destabilizing for a lot of people. I know it is for me. And I'm going to get into some of the material stuff about that soon. We talk a little bit in the live stream today about it, but you know, I'm just doing my little mini brain breather here, whatever. And I'll tell you the story. It's not even that much of a story, but there's this guy working at the grocery store, and I don't know, I've been doing my best. Anybody who's out there being an employee, doing those important fucking services and still has a place to go work, thank you. Fucking thank you, hardcore. People there stocking the shelves, I'm sure you're dealing with maniacs and like people being so stressed out and shitty to people as they don't know what to do with their anxiety over the whole situation. And you're just there doing the Lord's work, man. I know you're in a risky situation. Hope you're all washing your hands a lot, keeping that 6 feet distance from each other. But it's amazing. And he was weirdly like emotional. He was like, yeah, we're just trying. He seemed like he had this kind of like emotion in his eyes that you're just like, damn, I didn't even notice it. Allie noticed it and brought up later that, and I was like, yeah, you're right. He was just like, we're trying. Tuesday, we get more stuff in if you want, you know, people really want people to be okay, you know? And that's beautiful. I just keep being reminded of the disasterologist again. When things get bad, people get more pro-social, actually. You see all these movies of them, you know, and then that's the stuff that goes viral, right? People fighting over toilet paper or whatever. But in reality, and we've been talking to our neighbors, checking in on everybody, making sure everybody's okay and vice versa. And it's lovely. I mean, it's like people want to help each other when things get tough. And I think things are going to get tougher. And I don't even think it's going to be like some crazy death tolls or anything like that. It's going to be this increased isolation. And more importantly, people who can't work, people who can't get paychecks, you know, like, I don't know, work's been light for me for a while. But I've worked from home, so it doesn't change that much. But even I know things are going to dry up. You know, I know that like the video things that I'm editing for little corporate jobs and stuff like that, those are going to totally evaporate. Like there's not going to be a priority to do that stuff. I know that any place I do in-person entertainment stuff, acting or hosting, that's not going to happen for a while. All my classes, jiu-jitsu and comedy and all the things I'm doing, those are all getting canceled or turning into remote things. And people who are out there working in service industries, gig economy, anything like that, I know you're all losing your work, losing your jobs. And it's going to be really stressful to see what happens with, you know, when the first of the month comes, we got to pay rent. And it sounds like the government's doing some rumblings about helping that out, universal basic income and whatnot, things like that. But it's very stressful and it's very crazy and feeling, you know, it's very unsure. And I just want to say a few things about that. I guess one, just remember the way you care about other people and worry about them, other people feel that way about you too. And like, we will come together through this. If we prioritize solidarity, if we prioritize keeping each other okay, keeping each other in each other's thoughts, knowing well-being of a society depends on all of us doing our part. I mean, that's going to come through. That's going to be the priority. We're going to be good. And I think maybe a positive outcome of this is like people will see how crazy our current system is. I think a lot of people who have mental health issues, in my experience, seem to see it more clearly that there's something wrong with the shape of our society and our world, this constant rat race that we have to do every fucking month, every day, just to make enough money to be worth something to be alive. You know, I saw like, you know, the governor of California, he's announced the other day that like one of the things they're going to do is take over motels and hotels to house a bunch of the unhoused people in LA, 180,000 people or something like that. And it's like, yeah, that's fucking amazing. You wonder why they couldn't just do it before. Like, why does it take this virus? And I think that's become true about everything. It's like, hey, when there's not rent money that we can pay, when the stock market doesn't exist, whatever, there's still a house, you know, that just is there to be lived in. There's still, you know, food and medicine and things like that. Like, things still grow, the earth still works, and I don't know. Sometimes I feel crazy and I remind myself like the world's a little crazy. Like maybe your feelings that something's just off kilter in general and doesn't make sense with the structure of things and it's hard for you to comprehend the lack of fairness or care or justice in the world, whatever. Like maybe you're not crazy to feel that way. I don't think we are. And hopefully a silver lining of this is we'll see how good we can be to each other, how much better, how much more caring in material ways for each other. And, you know, staying connected, even though we're apart. I mean, technology has never been more useful or essential, I think, to preventing us from going stir crazy. So on that note, I would say stay in touch with people, check in with them a lot, just through FaceTime, just online stuff, you know. Check out the live stream with us on Sundays. Speaking of live streaming, I've started doing on my Instagram these, I call it quarantine calisthenics. Every day at noon, I'm doing a workout on Instagram live. The whole thing takes no more than 40 minutes, probably 30 minutes of actual working out. So, you know, you get a good sweat out of it. I've been loving it because I've been feeling really unmotivated, really not doing my self-care, and having to show up at noon to do it, make myself do it. Do it with a little bit of positivity, yelling at everybody, imaginary through the screen to do it along with me and keep it up and keep pushing. It's great. It's making me feel fucking good. Like it's lifting my spirits and, you know, it's good for your body, good for your brain. So if you feel like doing that, come on by Instagram, my mind, just Jarrett_sleeper. And I'll go live every day at noon. And then I think that video stays up for like 24 hours in my story too, if you miss it and you want to just come work out. I do tend to wear very little clothing, so just be forewarned. It's short shorts and leggings and sweat and hairy maniac. So deal with it. Their bodies, it's fine. Yeah, and then otherwise, just keep taking care of yourself. You know, you're doing what you're supposed to. You're washing your hands. You're keeping your distance. It's gonna be all right. If you get symptoms, you do start getting some coronavirus. You know, it's starting to be more widespread. If you are under, you know, that 65 year age or your fevers stay under 102 degrees, I believe is what the CDC said, ride it out at home if you can, you know, try not to overwhelm the system, the healthcare system. Everybody's doing their best and it's going to be all right. I think it's going to be all right. And hopefully some positive shit comes out of it. You know, we see that whatever we've done to get us to this point, man, maybe we need to adjust it. Maybe we could do a little better. So take care of each other, take care of yourself, and we're gonna be all right, y'all. I think we're gonna be okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. All right. That's it. I'm gonna let this thing segue now into the live stream with me and Nick chatting like we do. See you guys next Sunday. Mixer.com/mygoodbadbrain. Join us. And hey, last but not least, if you're digging the pod, check out patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. Oh fuck, that's what I was gonna say. Patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. I put a link there and you can find it. It'll take you to a Google doc, a Google folder that I put together where every week Nick is sharing literature. So PDFs of studies and stuff that will further support just resources of things we talked about on Sunday. So if you ever find yourself interested and want to know more about what's, you know, going on, what he was talking about, he's going to provide us with those things every week and I'll put them in that Google doc. But that's available at Patreon. It's not behind a paywall or anything. I just use the Patreon to list things. And then if you feel like throwing cash at the pod, it's so fucking appreciated. All right, that's it. Now we're segueing. Here we go into the live stream we did. Bye-bye. See you next Sunday.
Hi. Good morning. Hey, Dr. Nick. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. I mean, you know, as good as we can be, I guess. You know, doing this in our quarantine situation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty wild. What's happening with you? You're in Arizona. No, you're in Las Vegas. You're in Nevada. So it's probably a little different there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just less density here. There's just not that many people here, you know? So there's that part of it. But yeah, I'm in school. UNLV has gone on all online learning, you know. People are fighting over toilet paper. We went to Costco a couple weeks ago. It was okay. And now I'm seeing like crazy, you know, lines in the parking lot, people being weird.
Yeah. I think Allie, she's interviewed this disasterologist for her podcast. And I spoke with her. I met her like back, whatever. She did a great episode and she was on the virology episode this last week. And one thing I think that's really important to remember is like, those of us who read a lot of sci-fi and are like, you know, freaky about, like, we tend to think that it's going to turn into Mad Max or whatever. But the thing she really stresses is that actually every time disasters actually happen, you see like this explosion of pro-social behavior that like it's actually very, I don't know, people like get nicer to each other and they get helpful and they like, you know, help each other. They call them, they're like grassroots organizations, or they call them like collective disaster collectivism is one of the phrases that comes up. Like there's like when Katrina happened and things like that, there was just this like explosion of people who just start helping each other out and coming together. And it's actually like way more common than like everything that would make us led to believe that it gets really scary. And I don't know. Yeah. And it's true. You see, it's like Black Friday footage. It's like, you see people like punching each other over, you know, toilet paper, and you're supposed to think that's what
it's the kind of be. Classic like sensationalism and confirmation bias. Like, you know, people don't take pictures of like a nice interaction between two people, but
yeah,
you know, the toilet paper for sale out of the back of my Tahoe, like that's gonna,
yeah. I don't really get the toilet paper thing either. I don't really understand why it's like, why did toilet paper become the thing that is like, you know?
There'll be many articles written about it in the near future, I predict.
I think my brother's always a scheming. But one of his like funny little traits is he buys URLs like constantly. He's like always picking up, you know, new URLs. I'm trying to find the one because his newest one. oh my God. Whatever. I think I remember it correctly. It's I think it's just like happybutt.com or something like that. He's like gonna start like a bidet drop shipping site because he's like, it's gonna explode. I own it. Happy Butthole. I think it's happybutthole.com or something like that.
Yeah.
It's very funny. That's like the closest my family's coming to war profiteering, I guess, is he's going to try to start a funnily named bidet online shop.
Well, there's no URL shortage, so I think it's okay.
I know. There are a lot of people, like real garbage people who try to do that, I guess, who are like already in trouble for price gouging on Amazon. Bought like all the sanitizer and stuff and...
Yeah, here's the funny part too, though. Amazon still makes like between 15% and 20% of those sales before they clutch their
price. Like, we're cracking down on this terrible stuff that people are. I don't know. It's pretty weird. I don't know.
It's still in the early phase.
Like everyone here in my circles is like taking it pretty seriously. I think the idea of which I think was one of the things you wanted to talk about today, was you're going to talk about like just social distancing and the idea of it and the effects of it and stuff like that. But, you know, this last week we were supposed to have this birthday party for a friend. And since we're big old dorks, we all game together, me and my buddies. We play video games. So I planned this whole game crawl. We were going to go to like a VR place, and then we were going to go to this LAN arena and just like go to a few places and end up back home playing Magic. But it quickly became apparent that like it's probably not a good idea to go anywhere, you know, public gathering. There's only like five or six of us, but they were like, okay. And then we changed it to like, maybe we'll just have it. I'll just have it at my house, so we can all come hang out, and anybody who wants to crash can crash. And then we're like, is it a good idea to have like five or six people together for like 14 hours? You know, I don't know. And it just ended up becoming like a Discord. We'll hang out on Discord and play some games together. Like very much turned into like, oh, we're really doing this like isolating thing. I think that's good overall, because the whole idea of like thinking of the whole group, you know, that like that collectivist type of thinking is like, none of us are going to be killed by this thing, you know, but you know, somebody could get it. And then I think also, isn't it the whole point is to like reduce the strain on the healthcare system?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I don't know. So it's weird. I started yesterday, I'm calling it quarantine calisthenics. I streamed a little instructional workout that doesn't require any equipment and stuff like that. I'm going to do it again today at noon on my Instagram. But like, I don't know. That's kind of like, I guess, the closest. That's like my version of whatever everyone in Italy singing on the balconies together or try to.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea. I mean, you got to stay in shape, right?
Also, you go so stir crazy. Can't really go to the gym, though. What?
So you can't really go to the gym, though.
You can't go to the gym. That's what I'm saying. You can't go to the gym. We almost joined a gym like a week before this, and I'm glad we did it now, because we would be like locked into this membership and like with no way to go to the gym. All my jiu-jitsu gym's closed. Everything's closed. I think it's going to start. Oh, Terry did it. Thank you.
When did Dylan close?
About late last week.
Okay.
I think followed suit.
It's pretty crazy about the germ, so it makes sense.
Yeah, but what's funny about that is Nathan's a very, he's a he's like scientific mind. So Nathan is my martial arts instructor and coach. He owns this this jiu-jitsu gym. And part of his thing in opening the gym, because he used to work in biotech, was that like all the other gyms are so filthy. But he was like, he wrote this long letter. It's available on the Instagram about the closure. He like put it all in the comments. That was basically like, you know, that we kind of have a different situation than all these gyms that are closing. Most jiu-jitsu gyms have open door policies, huge mat spaces. They don't you know, screen anybody for cleanliness or whatever. And our gym's been like really strict about our cleanliness policies. We don't have any unannounced drop-ins. So he's like, it's like 20 of us in a fairly closed loop. I know everybody. If I'd shake your hand, then it's the same as if I'd roll with you. So he's like, so we don't, it's not really like necessary, but, and I was like, yeah, it'd be funny though if you were constantly railing against the germs of everybody else. And then when a jiu-jitsu community actually responds to a germ, you're like, yeah, but not, that doesn't make sense. You know, that'd be very ironic. But I think it's good. That's what I think is like for most of us. I think it's good for us just like a sort of a community solidarity thing to like make this a best practice.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, so my sister is a physician in North Carolina. But I mean, she's like a OBG oncologist, but they are worried. I mean, they only have one confirmed case. She works in a big community hospital, serves the low income community, you know, high risk people with a lot of complications, obesity, diabetes, you know, comorbidities, the people who would have problems, you know. And like I said, they only have one confirmed case, but you know, they don't have access to a ton of testing. But you know, she said the people in the hospital are concerned. They're worried about not having the capacity to treat all these people if they get a sudden influx of people with comorbidities. So I think, as you mentioned, it's really about healthy people trying to contribute to not burdening the healthcare system with a bunch of other stuff, just in case there is a surge in, you know,
which really gets into the idea of self-care pretty granularly, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, I think they're actually saying if you get it, to do your best to not come to the doctor if you can avoid it, that your mild, you know, if you're over a certain age or if your fevers get over 102, but
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, having over-the-counter fever reducer, you know, acetaminophen is
wait, so
what they're saying.
You said you're teaching, I mean, I feel like that'll be our topic for the next section today. Is like you said that you're teaching remotely now. The social distancing thing is happening for your school.
Yep.
What's that like? Is it different? Does it feel different?
Well, I mean, I've taught online before. I prefer to teach in person. I just feel like I like that energy better. Yeah. But, you know, there can also be obstacles. Like our student population is very diverse. We have a lot of first generation students. You know, not everybody has fast internet for video streaming at home.
Right.
So, you know, we're just going to be very flexible about it. The university's kind of let us set our own policies. So I'm going to have like a group chat during the time. But if people aren't able to do that, I'll have like distance learning options they can do to, you know, meet all their, get the credit and
access
the material. Well,
it is really interesting. I mean, Good Bad Brain has always, I mean, I can't help it. Like it's my Good Bad Brain and I very politically aware. But politics is policy, and policy is like the real things that affect your life. And I think people try to silo off mental health and politics as if like politics is like all the things happening and mental health is us trying to deal with all the things, is making sure. But like disconnecting sometimes, and it makes sense. It's like almost for just triage, for survival. You have to disconnect those things and just focus on like, look, whatever's going to happen, I got to think about mental health and focus there. Sometimes just thinking about politics fucks with my mental health, you know, but politics really, which is also the structure of our society, is like by another name, so essentially affects our mental well-being and like our sense of self and our sense of safety and what's going on, these things that, you know, and I guess like it's been interesting to see how this event, like the telecommuting, in particular, right, is a good example of like, I've seen a lot of people saying like, you know, from the disabled community and stuff, saying like, you know, hey, this is a really good example of like all the things that generally ableist cultures told us are impossible, working from home, you know, blah, 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 all these things are like, suddenly very obviously possible. Like suddenly it's like we can, you know, like everyone's a socialist and a fox.
Yeah, I mean, kind of it shows you that these kind of myths, these false narratives of what we can and shouldn't do change very quickly when you apply pressure in the right places. You know, so now suddenly, oh, actually we can decide that all these tests are going to be free.
Right.
But there won't be copays. And that happened in like 48 hours.
Yes.
You know, or yes. Now we're talking seriously about providing some form of universal basic income to people whose jobs depend on service industry face-to-face contacts. Like suddenly that's plausible instead of insane, you know?
Yes.
So I think, yeah, you just see how so much of these are narratives that gain power and maintain power just because they aren't questioned actively, you know?
Yes. Well, I think it's also like just everything is such a construct that we've like agreed on and or agreed on that we exist in, you know, all of these, like we were talking about this before we started, the stock market crashes like crazy. Let's just say that happens. You know, they try to infuse it with $150 billion or whatever like that, which creates like a spike and then back to nothing. And you're like, $150 billion could do so much. And they're like, no, but it's loans. But that's the point. It's all like this imaginary stuff. And all of the like houses still exist and medicine still exists and you know, equipment to build new houses still exist. Like all these resources still exist outside of this imaginary system. Yeah. And it's like weird to see that pressure of some outside force. I don't know. I'm curious to see if like there's a positive outcome to this whole thing of people like coming together a little bit and some of these policies like really essentially changing to care for the whole.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing, you know, so we were talking about this consensual reality that we all live in, you know, during times of normalcy and how that consensual reality is kind of changing now, creating uncertainty. So one thing the brain really doesn't like is uncertainty, right?
Right.
It works very hard to resolve uncertainty in the terms that it's comfortable and familiar with. Right? Again, that's more cognitively efficient. Uncertainty creates anxiety in your whole physiological system. So, and this is kind of adjacent to the concept of homeostasis, which is like, you know, stability, essentially, is how you can think about it. So we're now, you know, both in a kind of larger political and economic systemic sense, unstable. And that's, you know, associated with internal cognitive instability. The things that were our patterned ways of behaving that we didn't have to think too hard about, now suddenly we do have to think hard about. And so, you know, that creates, yeah, as I said, a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
Frankly, I'm not optimistic that if there's a relatively, you know, quick, and I mean within months, resolution to these things, that we'll see a big shift in normalcy. I just think that's not how big systems operate.
So we got to knock at the door there.
Weird.
I'm going to ignore it for now.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, my guess is that quick resolution will be mean that we kind of go back to business as usual, which isn't great.
Well, I'm curious to see what happens with the election and stuff as well, just because all this primary stuff, like, I don't know, it's throwing everything into this very strange, unpredictable territory, which it always is. I mean, Donald Trump won the fucking election last time and no one in the Republican Party, it was all a joke. Like, so the idea that something like very outside the norm could happen, pushed by, you know, Naomi Klein had a great thing about that what looks safe and risky changes a lot when different outside factors happen. And that, like, business as usual starts to look really risky in a environment where that's gotten us to this place of this little pandemic going on. And that, like, suddenly things like universal health care and sort of, like you said,
wage.
Yeah, it all becomes very apparent. I mean, we're talking, there's some homeless families. I think they're mostly mothers with their kids who are homeless, have taken over some abandoned homes in LA that apparently are owned by Caltrans. And they just said, we're just going to live here. That's what's happening now. These empty houses that Caltrans is like just transportation. It's like the highway, I think, the highway, like maintenance people and stuff. And then rail was all public transit, but they're like, we're living here. We need homes. We're going to take over homes in this abandoned. And it's like, yes, use the homes. Sure. Telling people to isolate in their homes. What about people who don't have homes? What about the vulnerable people? That affects everybody.
The San Francisco's put out a suggestion that homeless people try to sleep one to a tent. Like,
incredible.
Fuck you.
Fucking San Francisco, dude. But yeah, this should be like, very clear that if it affects one of us, it affects all of us. That's how this. Anyway, on that note, I think I'd like to ask you, I want to personally ask a question with some experience I've been having, which is related to something I got on Instagram as well. We got another question. I'm going to ask, someone asked a nice long question about codependency, which we'll talk about. But yeah. I want to bring this one up. Someone said the other day to me, this is when I was doing my little workout thing online. They said, what gives you the motivation to work out when you really don't feel like getting out of bed? And, I want to ask about that, and then I'll segue into my other question, because basically that question about if you are deep, it's a two-sided question I want to ask for myself. One is this, your advice, and maybe some of mine for like if you find yourself deep in a state, whether it's an anxiety attack or under the thumb of depression or ruminations from either of those things or ADHD or whatever. When you can recognize that you are under it and it's got you, like, triage things some kind of like lifeboat techniques to get yourself out of it. And my second question is going to be like, if it's not you, if it's someone close to you, if there's ways that help. But let's do that one first. If I'm really in it, like, whatever my attack might be, do you have any ideas or strategy, other than anything established to help me get out?
Yeah. So there are a couple ways I could talk about this. Let me first say this though. While of course it's like ideal to stop feeling these negative emotions that get in the way of us doing things like that, that's ideal. I actually want to push back on it a little bit and try to get you to think about, even if you continue to feel this way, what could you do at this moment that is consistent with your larger goals and values? So if you imagine this, like imagine kind of a palm tree, right? On the beach, somehow it's living there. And the tide comes in and out. And sometimes the tide's really high and sometimes it's really low. Well, the tide is kind of like your emotions. They're always moving. You know, it's a moving target. They're in and out. Mm-hmm. And so if you try to peg what you're going to do to your emotions, it's very hard to feel stable because that's the nature of emotions. They constantly move in and out. But your kind of values and goals are sort of like the palm tree. They're there, present, whether you're happy, sad, and under crushing depression, having a panic attack, feeling neutral or feeling great, you know, that those goals and values might be easier to see at different times, easier to access, but they're pretty stable even though emotions come in and out. So I think one question is like, okay, well, I feel like I'm under, you know, a 1,000-pound boulder right now, and I just feel like I can't get out of bed or I don't want to. Given that that's how I feel, what is like one thing I can do that's consistent with my goals and values? And maybe it literally means like rolling out of your bed onto the floor and like stretching for a second, trying to touch your toes.
Yeah. That's so maybe interesting. So two things about that. One is like, it seems good to then take some time when you are in an okay mindset to like establish what your overall goals are, like what your principles of what kind of a person you are, what kind of person you believe you are and want to be, what kind of things you want to do. Is it better to have like things you want to do? You know what I mean? Like something more objective or external, or you know what I mean? Than like a quality of like, I want to be stronger, or you know what I mean?
I think it's good to, and the evidence indicates as well that it's good to behaviorally define these things.
Okay.
And define them in a way that's quantifiable. Because if it's like, I want to feel better.
Right.
You know, well, I woke up today and I feel like shit. Does that mean I'm not making progress on my goals?
Right.
But if it's like, I want to do some physical activity that requires sweat, or maybe even I want to do some physical activity, I don't even need to sweat, it just needs to take 10 minutes.
Yeah. That's great.
You know, that, I still feel like garbage, but I did that.
You did that. You overcame. Yeah. Well, I will say definitely establishing being maybe a little, when I was like 12, I always remember this. Like I'm still am just terrified all the time. Just like fear is just such a part of your life on some existential level. And, I remember deciding that I wanted to be a brave person. And that meant that if something scared me, I did it. That like that was just it. If I could frame something as I'm afraid of it, oh, I'll do it. Which, of course, as a 12, like that led me as a young man to do very stupid things from time to time. You know, it was very like Marty McFly. Like, if you call me a chicken, I'll just do whatever you say, like whatever you want. But it was helpful just to decide like this is the kind of I don't think I'm naturally this person. I want to be this person, and I defined some behaviors that person would have, and then yeah. I would try to do that. That's interesting because I also said to this person, my personal advice is like, I don't know, is to be gentle with yourself and to realize like some days just getting through the day is a fucking win.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit last week that like if I can't get out of bed, maybe I could put a foot on the floor. You know, like just tiny little goals. And then I'll say this last thing, and then I'd love for you to actually is I read this concept once about no zero days, and someone, I don't know, maybe on Reddit, someone said it. They had come up with it as a personal thing. They're like, I just decided they were like no more 0 days, which meant if I got to the end of the day and it was like about to be midnight, I would do one push up. And it was like I did something today to improve myself, like just tiny little things you can do just to say like no matter what, every day is a little bit of an inch towards making myself better, even if it's just a tiny little act, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, you know, the kind of, so, you know, one answer is like, don't fall into the trap that you have to feel better to do things. And
yeah,
don't
that's
fall
so,
into
that's so good to remember. Cause also I yeah, think as somebody helping is like, don't shame, don't be like, just stop feeling this way, which is a problem that I have. I'm like, why are you doing, what's happening? I try to like logically get us to go like, why are we
another
feeling
way,
this way?
Yeah. Another way to think about it is that emotions are probably the, so if you think about the cognitive triad, which is thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, emotions are probably, so feelings are probably the things we have the least direct control over of those three. And so if you try to start your cycle of change on the thing you have the least control over, that's going to be frustrating. The thing you have the most control over is your behaviors. Because, you know, if you took somebody, like sometimes people, like I'll just think of this analogy where I'm like, I just cannot do this right now because of my mood. And someone's like, well, if I switched places and jumped into your brain, I could make your body do it.
Yeah, that's so good.
You're like, okay, well, that's true, right? So the thing that I have most control over is the behavior. So if I start with the behavior, typically what happens is that'll start the cycle spinning in a different direction. Then maybe my thoughts will start to change like, oh, you know what? This wasn't so bad. I was able to put one foot on the ground, you know? And then eventually dragging behind my behaviors and thoughts will follow my emotions. That's typically the way we see it.
Just get your, that's that. There seems to be so much too about like tricking your somatic symptoms, like just forcing your body through a movement and then like somehow the chemicals and the associations come behind it.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, again, we have to remember that thoughts and feelings are not untethered imaginary constructs somewhere in the air. They are the product of physiological processes.
Yeah.
That's what they are. And so maybe there's something else too, you know, that
sure.
Maybe, but that's not my domain. So there are physiological processes. And if you start to make your body engage in other physiological processes, you will see a change in your emotions. Now, it may not be a super intense change where suddenly you feel great, but as I'm saying, like at least in the beginning, let yourself be free of that tether that for some reason you need to feel great to do stuff. Totally. You don't need to. It goes the opposite way, actually. And the more you do stuff, probably the better you will feel. And the last thing is just that this is a long game, you know?
Yeah.
This is a long game. It's not a sprint. It really is a marathon. And, you know,
God damn. Yeah.
Emotions are really, they are intense and in the present moment. And so if we get stuck only seeing things in tiny slices of present moment, and it's good to be in the present moment in some other ways, and you know, we can talk about that. But if you're fixated only on your emotion in the moment, it makes it difficult to look at the kind of trajectory of your experience and behavior.
Yeah. And I bet, so that kind of segues into this, like, if somebody I am close to is deep in a, and I can recognize that they're in a state that they're not, you know, it's like the least helpful thing to be like, just stop feeling, this isn't real. Like, it's not real. It's like what seems helpful is to like remind them like, well, what would you like to accomplish? What would you like to do? I mean, well, that's my question. I don't know. This is just what it seems like. But instead of going to what it seems like, what should I do? Like, if someone, what's helpful? Because it does feel like, what, here's the worst case. This is how I fuck up, is I'm just like, I try to run someone through like what they're experiencing is just in their head, kind of, you know, it's like, it's part of, I kind of do what I try to do for myself, which kind of works for me sometimes, dissociating, yeah, but not for everybody else. And then I feel like it just becomes about like becoming focused on what made me go like, aha, when you're just talking, it was like, it feels like I fuck up by helping somebody get focused on how they shouldn't be feeling how they're feeling. And then they just try to change how they're feeling and like focus on the, and then it becomes like a failure to do that. And it just like turns into this loop of like, oh, I guess I just can't stop. I'm fucked up. You know what I mean? And that seems wrong. That seems to be like how you, I don't know. What should I do? It's like how you feel is out of your control a little bit, but what you do isn't.
Right. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, like, nobody in the context of a friendship relationship or a romantic relationship, nobody in the context of like a healthy relationship got somebody to change their feelings or behavior against their will. So the person, you know, I think one of the things is like, what do you to ask? Like, what do you want right now? Do you want just empathy and validation? Do you want me to just listen? Or do you want like problem solving?
Yeah.
And I think a good thing to agree on is, especially if this is like a close friend or partner, and this is like something that people have been working on for a while, I think you should have this conversation when you're both feeling okay. Is like, hey, when one of us is in this state, what do you think is a good way to proceed? Can we start by asking what the other person wants? And if you're going to do that, like, this is a DBT assumption, which, you know, I realize that's not all normal like relationships, but I do think this can be helpful, is if you are going to say that you want problem solving or advice, you have to be willing to make an attempt.
Got it.
Yeah. And if you're not willing to make an attempt,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if you're not willing to make the attempt, which is fine. Sometimes you don't want to make the fucking attempt. You just want to complain and have somebody listen to you. That's fine.
Yeah.
But you have to say that.
Because it feels like it's like love languages. I always project what I want, which is some kind of existential philosophical exploration of like dissociation where I'm like, this is a thing going on in my head. It's not real. I don't have to blah, blah. But I try to do that for other people who that's not their primary thing. And they're just like, no, I am feeling this. This is completely taking over my, like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you trying to, you know what I mean? It just turns, and then they feel bad that like they can't do, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's just like so useless. So that's really good. Talk to them about what helps them in a state when they're not there. Be like, what helps you? If you don't know somebody, is there like a good baseline, like broadly speaking, way to respond to somebody who's like, you know, like, let's say you were like, let's say I was like on the train or something like that, and someone's clearly like not like violent, just like clearly like just so in a bad spot. Like, you know, you can tell when somebody's having like anxiety attack or something like that. And if you make some, is there something to do about like, hey, you're okay or anything, or do you just have to leave people alone?
Well, I think it's really tricky. I would not advocate like just trying to do like non-consensual intervention with strangers. I don't recommend doing that.
Of course, yeah.
But you know, if someone's having a panic attack or they're hyperventilating, I mean, as we've kind of talked about, you know, grounding and deep breathing is the antidote for panic. That's why they have people like people blow into paper bags. It's not because there's something magic about a paper bag, it's because it forces you to regulate your breathing because you're seeing the bag expand and contract. That's why, like, expand and contract this bag, because panic breathing is like this. It's not that you're not getting enough oxygen, you're not expelling enough carbon dioxide. So expanding and what's the fucking other word? going like this with a paper bag.
Contracting. Yeah, going like this. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, with okay, the paper bag.
On the same note, I don't want to get too into this because it's sort of like personal from this week and I don't want to divulge other people's stuff too much. But I had this like experience this week. A friend who I only know through online, but I've talked to, you know, we play video games together. Me and is in my community. He's, you know, been going through some tough stuff, stuff that feels close to things I've gone through, whatever. And one day, like, left some really disturbing sort of suicidal ideation messages online. And we all freaked out. And like the rest of us in the group. And we were like, you know, figured out how to get his mom's cell phone up. We just did a bunch of stuff to get in touch, be like, please, someone just check on him. And then he was okay. Meaning, I mean, you know, he was like alive and he hadn't done anything, but it fucking freaked us out. It was really scary and bad. I couldn't believe like the amount of panic I'm feeling and concern and like the love that I feel for this person, you know, like that I was just like, oh man. And we were just like, we love you. Tell him we love it. Like we just, you know, and he, I don't know, kind of like went back to business as usual so quickly that he was like, I shouldn't have told you guys about this or mentioned anything. I won't do it when I won't let anybody know when I do it for real, and just tried to like go back to being normal. And I don't know how to behave because I'm like, I care and I'm fucking worried. But there's this other part of me too. I've noticed this thing in myself happens. It's happened with my brothers in the past. It's happened with my dad. Where like if somebody I love or feel like love for is like very evidently in a, I don't know, a part of me almost like half numbs. Like I have this like weird reaction where I've had it with my little brother. I'm so terrified about my siblings getting hurt. And there's been times my brother was so in such a bad place with like a you know, breakup-y stuff and just so strange. I'd never seen him so like loose. So like unhinged. I was like, I don't know if he's going to do something to hurt himself. And that thought was just like, okay, well you can't control it. And almost like shut down and numbed in this weird way of like, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm so worried, but it was just like, he might do something really fucking bad. Nothing I can do about it. It was weird, you know, like this. And I felt like, I feel like cold to dissociate, but, and I just don't know how to proceed, I guess, when somebody does stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's within, I will just say that's totally within the normal scope of behavior. You're describing is to feel so overwhelmed that you kind of cognitively shut down, in the sense that you stop feeling as intensely and thinking about things that you need to do. That's a totally normal response. It makes perfect sense. And I think probably everyone listening can relate to that. The thing is, you know, what I would say, number one, it's a good idea to have the addresses and phone and contact information of your friends who are going through a hard time, because the police will do a wellness check.
I know, but that was a thing too. We were like, should we call the police and figure that out? And first, well, most of us didn't know his address, but then we were also like, no offense, but like police kill people. I mean, like we were like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yes. And so you got to think about that for sure. You know, I don't think that's a first line thing to do.
Yeah. Right.
But it's kind of like a last line thing to do. And so I don't think you should treat your friends as patients. I'll just say, like, when I've worked with patients who are have suicidal ideation and are at risk for suicide, we will come to an agreement that, you know, the agreement is that you will contact me if you feel this way, and we'll talk about some emotion regulation techniques you can try. If none of those work and you can't guarantee me that you will feel that you'll keep yourself safe until at least our next appointment, then you agree to go to the emergency room. If you refuse to do that, or you don't answer calls after you've disclosed this to me and we're working on it, then my next step will be to order a safety check. Do you agree to that?
Got
you know
it.
That's how, but you know, like I said, friends aren't patients.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah,
you know, here's the thing. I think it's very complicated and difficult. You gotta you know, wrap people in love and soothing, let them know that you're worried about them, help them get resources, which means it might mean getting on the phone with them to make an appointment.
Yeah.
You know, might mean getting mom or someone in the family on the phone with them to make an appointment. But here's the other thing. If this is, you know, it can also be an indicator that people are in a skills deficit where they don't have the skills to appropriately ask for help from people, and they don't have the skills to regulate their emotions in a healthy way. And so one thing that they not do on purpose in a manipulative sense, I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But one thing that like has been reinforced through social learning is that if they disclose suicidality, the network comes around them and helps them.
Yeah.
And so that's just it's just conditioning. It's reinforcement that if I feel super overwhelmed and I just don't have the skills to regulate how I'm feeling, but I disclose ideation, the network comes around and kind of soothes me. And then I feel better for a while. But the problem is that that pattern burns people out over time.
Right.
And you never learn those regulatory skills. So you got to kind of look at these behaviors in a, you know, is this something that's happening a lot? Is this a tool essentially for emotion regulation? Because that suggests kind of a different way of treating and managing, you know? So
that's my concern is I was like, I also know it's not going to be a long-term solution to just always be on call because I don't know what the fuck I'm not a doc, you know, you're like just trying to figure like, how do I help? What do I help with? And then you're like, I don't want to like make a point of like, oh, it fucking feels bad. You're hurting me when you do that. You're hurting all these people when you do this. Cause then it feels like they twist that into like, oh, I guess I'm just such a piece of shit. I should, you know, you're just like, I don't know. It just, you just feel so helpless and you're just so like, I love you. I want you to feel love and I don't know how to give it to you. And I don't know how to get you to do what you're saying to help you down a path where you can like regulate, you know?
I mean, here's the thing, you know, people do not harm themselves because of other people saying things to them that aren't quite right. And I'm not talking about systemic bullying. I'm not talking about systemic bullying or trauma in the home or abuse. You know, those things can destabilize people so much that it seems like, you know, that's their only way out. It isn't, but that's a different story. But, you know, because you approach someone the wrong way or say the wrong thing, that's not going to trigger them to kill themselves. Another thing we know about suicide is it's typically not impulsive. For some people it is, but for most people it's not.
Yeah.
It's a scaffolded behavior that they've practiced and rehearsed over time, mentally and physically.
Damn.
So you're not going to say something and cause somebody to kill themselves. In fact, talking honestly and clearly and directly about it seems to be the best thing to do. So it's not, I don't think, inappropriate to say to your friend, look, this really scared us. It really freaked us out. You owe it to yourself and to your friends who care about you and who would be destroyed if you did this to get help. And I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Let's set aside an hour this week and call some numbers. Now, can you do that all the time? No. And maybe that's like a little too much for you to do. You kind of have to figure out, you know, what is appropriate for your skills and values and comfort.
Yeah.
And that might
mean, I just know like, I don't know. When I felt suicidal, I'm like, I'm just fucking glad I survived it. Cause like when you're in it, you're just like, this is never going to get better. And that whole dumb thing about like a temporary solution to a permanent solution to a temporary problem is so fucking real. It's like, you're just making a choice for eternity.
Well, it's a very, very poor problem solving strategy because, you know, all the problems still exist. It's just that you aren't there.
Right.
So if it's problems, you know, there are better ways to go about that.
Yeah. Someone asked this question in the chat. What do you think about mental first aid classes? Have you ever heard of that? Mental first aid?
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's good to teach people some basic skills. Like,
but is this a thing? Mental first aid? I've never heard of this.
No, it's like, there is no like uniform body or like certifying body for any of this stuff. It's basically like different ways of doing psychoeducation and teaching some basic skills and like providing basic resources. And I don't think that's a bad idea. The thing is, you don't want to make people think they're professionals when they're not. You don't want to put that responsibility and burden on people who haven't gone through training and aren't supervised. But, you know, I think it's analogous to physical first aid. Like, you're not a doctor when you've taken a first aid class.
Right.
But you can do some things to help, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's similar, like learning how to validate, learning how to talk about emotions, maybe learning how to do a risk assessment and having some resources and phone numbers in your back pocket. I don't think that's a bad idea.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. So this, I'm going to get this last little question. We got an email question. Hello. I was wondering if you and Dr. Nick can discuss the differences between the term codependency in the mental health world versus the way the term gets commonly used in casual conversation. I recently had a therapist suggest I look into CODA, which is Codependence Anonymous. So I did some research to see if my preconceived notions of the word lined up with the way mental behavioral health professionals use the term / diagnosis. Any clarification would be greatly appreciated. I think this is yes, because I throw this term around a lot. I think a lot of people, it means different things when you say it. I will also say that there's a major difference between codependency and dependency. And there's some, in some of the attachment theory books and stuff I've read, they talk about that. But anyway, first of all, I think one point you were going to make is like, it's not an actual diagnosis, right? It's not.
There's no codependent disorder in the DSM. So right. There's no DSM diagnosis with the term codependency. Now if people there, I just pulled this up right before. Can you still see me when I mouse off like that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I pulled this up before. There's a bunch of research literature here. I think, you know, there's a decent one from, this is from 1999, but it's called Codependency and Empirical Study from a Systemic Perspective. And what's, I think, interesting about this, I can link to it.
I will say really side note, somebody asked about links. I'll say this again at the end, but we will get a collection of links. I'll put them on the Patreon and they'll be available publicly there. You don't have to, won't be behind a paywall, but it's just a place I can post at the patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. Anyway.
Yeah. So whenever you have something like this, which is a construct, you know, people create measures like paper and pencil measures to measure that construct and to see if it's statistically reliable and valid and connected to other things that you would expect it to be. Okay. So that's what that article does. But basically here's how I would think about it. Human beings are in one sense, of course, codependent. We're social animals. We depend on each other for resources to develop our ideas of our social selves, to develop an identity. Like in that sense, we depend on each other and that's normal and healthy. What we mean by codependent when we talk about it in an unhealthy way is using another person to regulate your emotions. So if you are using another person to regulate your emotions instead of you learning how to regulate your own emotions, then that is a type of unhealthy codependency. Mm. Okay. And, you know, I'll look into it and see if there are any like evidence-based psychometric tests you can use to look at this. My guess is that it's going to be pretty difficult to find a good one because it's so contextually dependent, but yeah. I'll take a look. But I think you got to ask yourself, am I doing the work of regulating my own emotions, or am I expecting my friend or partner or family to regulate those emotions for me?
Yeah, I heard a thing once. The most succinct, I felt, description of codependency as it showed up in my life, at least, was keeping other people sick so that they always need you to care for them. Like this kind of like way you can get in these relationships where when it, like crab in a bucket stuff, whenever they start to get too happy, you figure out a way to be shitty to them. Or I think another common thing that I've noticed with it is that like if you that you'll sub in conflict and negative feelings for positive ones just to create intimacy. You can't be nice to each other or whatever, but the closeness and the intensity and the attention that you are afforded, the focus of a fight, is almost as good.
Yeah.
And
sure.
And that sort of a thing. I think one thing for me that's become a hallmark of codependent interactions is when I realize like we're always fighting, we're always like working something out, and when I'm working it out, I really feel like we're working it out. We're really making progress. And that's like I've realized in some relationships, like my goal was to get the other end of the working it out. That like I always associate with myself. I sit in the fire. I'm good. I don't mind. I can do hard things because on the other end of that rainbow of that hard work and communication and discomfort is going to be a better thing. And then realizing for some people, whether or not they're aware of it, that is the relationship, like the working it out is what they want. I think we're going to work it out and then get to have this relationship where like we build each other up, we create together, we have like a wonderful time just sharing each other's company. But for some people, it's like that's not, on some level, the relationship they want is in the conflict. And those all feel like aspects of codependency to me.
Yeah, well, and so this article and I think, you know, others also typically identify this as like a multi-generational process. So, you know, I think codependency is often like a small word that covers a lot of territory. And some of that territory includes like multi-generational communication styles, right? How was emotion regulated in your family system? How did people disclose vulnerability in your family system? How did people negotiate the boundaries of independence
in the family system? It feels like a common one with the family system thing, especially, is like a kind of intertwining where I'd say the most common would be like very Catholic, very puritanical, like, you know, somebody does well, so somebody else has to like cut them down or be shitty about it. Like something about you being happy makes me upset and good people are unhappy. You know, like there's kind of like that sort of entangling of experience feels very family unit codependent to me.
Yeah. So like in the kind of family systems literature, people talk about having differentiation of self, you know, which is where you have your own boundaries and you have personal autonomy in the sense that you're responsible for your own emotions. And at the same time, you're in a healthy system with others where you are thinking of them as autonomous individuals who have their own rights to their beliefs, desires, goals, and emotions and are responsible for regulating those things on their end. And you try to support each other in those efforts, you know?
Okay. Well, on that, because I wanted to say this last thing about, it's very important to me. It really blew my mind in this book that codependency is different than dependency. And they talk about that dependency is like a healthy, like, people who are pair bonded and stay stable partners together for like a long time are actually much happier and healthier. They, you know, and that has to do with just relying on each other. If I know I can rely on somebody, which is not the same thing. I think it's important to stress that in popular health and culture, pop psychology, and you know, it's not saying you are responsible for all of your well-being all the time. You're an island, blah, 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 blah. It's like, and that it's unhealthy if you are pulled up by someone else or like rely on someone else to help you. That's like, that's actually, my understanding is that is quite healthy, is if you have a safe enough relationship to rely on somebody. Codependency is, this is why it's hard to like explain, like it's different, you know, it's like a toxic version of what we want.
Well, that's why I think the idea of requiring someone else to regulate your emotions for you is, I like that definition, because when you have a pair bond or you're in a family system, people are going to depend on each other for other things. You know, like if I'm feeling bad, I might want comfort from you, but that doesn't necessarily mean that in the context of this relationship, the dynamic is that I require you to regulate my emotion. It's just like, I'm feeling bad and I want some comfort from you. But you know, if I'm at work feeling bad, I can deal with that myself. I'm not going to come home and blame you for not being there for me.
Right. I'll appreciate the help. I will accept the help if you are there and it's available to help me, but it's not your fault that I'm not.
And you might also understand that like, oh, this person is their own unique autonomous individual going through their own process. And so they might be, you know, going through whatever thing right now.
Right.
And it's not because of me.
Yes. That's the hardest part for me. That's probably my codependency shows up a lot too, is in like, almost like an irritation, like, why won't you let me help you? You know, like you're upset. And then I'm like, oh, it's my, I feel bad because I can't fix you. And so I must be bad. Why are you, you know what I mean? Wow, that's fucked up. Yeah, that's so, it's like a healthy separation of personalities of saying like, we love and care about each other, but I'm not you, you're not me. We're just here to help each other.
Right. And again, like I think when it comes to the idea of disorder in the DSM sense of the word, every DSM disorder, all of them, have as a core requirement functional impairment. So So if you have all of the symptoms and no functional impairment in your relationships, professional life, et cetera, you can't meet criteria for the disorder. Now, that never happens. If you had all of those symptoms, right, you're going to have impairment, you know, but impairment remains this core criteria. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much. Like if you're like, oh my God, am I codependent with my partner? I mean, are you guys doing well? Are you like, is work going well? Are you, do you have friends? Do you feel like socially fulfilled? If so, I wouldn't worry about it that much.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Okay. Well, we got a few minutes left. Let's segue into our don't kill yourself list thing. And I'm going to go first because I'm going to use this as an opportunity because they said they suggested they look into CODA, the Codependence Anonymous thing. And I'll just say, yeah, anonymous programs are a big don't kill yourself list thing. Like, I've done a little bit. I've done mostly what I've done in the past was Al-Anon, which is that's usually family members of people who are addicts, and or you have a qualifier. It could be a friend. It could be just a person. Everyone has a qualifier. Everyone's got one. You throw a rock in LA, you'll find a qualifier. But but don't throw a rock at them. You know what I mean? Anyway, those programs. I will say this about CODA and why I think it's probably a good idea to go. When I went to those rooms, usually the anonymous rooms that they like. They're shared by a lot of things. They'll be like sex addicts. Yeah. They'll be narcotics. They'll be like Alcoholics Anonymous. And so sometimes you love addiction. You look around the wall and they all have their steps, and you'll realize like, oh, they're all the same steps. And whether it's gambling, a drug, alcohol, if it's like sex, whatever it is, love, if it's codependency, these patterns, this is just my, no one said this, but this is what I've observed, that these patterns are all the same, like the effect that it has on you is the same. And my friend Zeke, in an episode we did a long time ago, who's been sober for like 17 years or something like that, in the program, he said that they refer to what's called the God-shaped hole. And I know some people don't feel, please just use that one syllable word God to mean whatever you want it to mean, about meaning, about like your purpose, your sense of belonging in this world, whatever it is that you have this hole in you where that should be. And I'm like, oh yeah, got that. I know all about that fucking hole. And into that you throw something to try to fill it over and over again. And tends to be, I think, like compulsive sorts of behaviors and all things that could fall into any of these things that gambling gives you, or you think it'll give you. Gambling you think it'll give you, sex you think it'll give you, the love and affection of others, a codependent intense relationship where you feel purpose and existence, just drinking to numb it, whatever it is. And that they all have this sort of same core thing. And when you, so like any of those programs end up being helpful. Like if you have that hole that like, I think there's something really magical about just hearing your experiences that you thought like were so unique and like you must be alone in, come out of somebody else's mouth when they're sharing and be like, oh fuck. Oh my God. This is, wow. We're in this together. Wow. This is like not just me alone. This is an established thing. It's very profound and somehow healing.
Yeah, so Freud called that the oceanic feeling, like wanting to feel held again, you know, like you were in the womb, you know. But let me just say, because this is a great segue, that this study came out like March 11th. It's a Stanford study. And basically it showed that, so this, it's a study of studies, like again, kind of gold tier evidence, a study of 35 studies with 10,000 participants comparing Alcoholics Anonymous to other types of alcohol treatment, and AA was the most effective.
Wow.
Yeah, and part of why people speculate that that's the case is because there is this social component, this intense social component, where you're with other people and you're getting support from that, from a network of other people. So, you know, it's consistent with other research that indicates that social connections are incredibly important for health and well-being. So I would just say, you know, even though we're having to do social distancing now, like get on that FaceTime with your friends. Like I've had, I think, 3 like group FaceTime calls this week with friends and family, and it makes a difference, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So
before that, I was going to say Discord and like, which we're talking on now, FaceTime, Google Hangout, whatever. That's definitely on the Don't Kill Yourself list this week, is it's like, this rocks, this ability to just like Star Trek into each other's life. I mean, when that shit started happening, we were like, oh my God, fucking look at this. Is now we take it so for granted, but we were like, we're in movies now, we're in the future movies.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's thanks, man. Thanks for hanging out for this hour again. Thanks you guys for being here for the stream. I will say I'm going to keep. I did this quarantine calisthenics thing yesterday. That I invite you to join me, whoever wants to. I'm gonna do it on my Instagram live, the Jarrett_sleeper one. Yesterday we lost the sound. I think because I was playing jams and the music was like maybe too proprietary. So today it's gonna be like weird. Silent working out. You can put your own music on and I'll just, you know, be sweating there and talking about how to do moves, but no equipment. It won't be necessarily super easy, but you take it at your own pace. Probably won't be more than like half hour, 40 minutes, no equipment necessary. Just a little space in your room. I do it on hardwood just to make a point, that you could just do it wherever. So we'll do that workout on my Instagram live at noon. I'm going to try to keep that going. Quarantine calisthenics. It seems nice. There's a nice little engagement. We'll get up and moving if you feel like it. Also this week I'm going to have Nick, you're going to give us a list of resources and things like that. And I will put them up at, I'll put them all up at patreon.com/mygoodbadbrain. I'll put them in a post that will be available publicly. And if anybody wants to go there too and throw some cash at the pod, that'd be good. This week was the first week. I've officially called it season three. We're beginning. I put up our last week's live stream because that was the sound was good and it felt nice. So this will be the pod now. And that's pretty much it. Check it out on Patreon. Check it out on iTunes, on Spotify. We'll keep this going. I really like this rhythm. We've done it like four times now, so we're starting to get this. Sundays at 10. Do you want to add anything or plug anything? Tell them to find you or anything like that.
No. Like I'm on Twitter, so it's what the fuck is it? Dr. Nicholas Barr One. Cool. Yeah, on Twitter, and that's pretty much where I'll respond most of the time. You know, to like questions or messages there about this type of content. So you guys can reach me there.
Oh, all right. So yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna eat some oatmeal and charge my phone, and then see you guys in a little less than an hour. We'll sweat at Instagram Live. We'll do it. I was thinking about I might do it on here in the future, just figure it out. But right now we'll keep it on Instagram Live. All right. Thanks you all. Thanks Nick. Talk to you soon. Yeah. Bye. Oh, what am I doing? Post show. Here we go. We'll transition. Bye. Okay. Bye. 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 Wait. I'm learning to do this. I forgot to use our overlay for the whole episode. Isn't that amazing? Look, this is what it should have looked like.
Yeah, that was good. There's some good questions there.
That's what it should have been the whole time. Ah, well, what are you going to do? All right. Let me play the fucking song. We're going to play the song.
Oh, fuck.
We love it. Okay. Bye. Bye, guys. Have a good day. See you next week.
Welcome to my good bad brain. I'm a normal person, so I'm insane. I've got depression and ADHD, but I'm doing better since I medicated me. I'm still not always sure whether I exist or what being a person even really is. But I figured out a long time ago that being alive is beautiful.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.